6:30, if you could please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Kopisch?
Here.
Trustee Gendrich?
Here.
Trustee Green is excused. Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart?
Here.
Trustee Gass?
Here.
Trustee Zeller?
Here.
We have one suggested modification to the agenda, and that's to move number 9 up to 5B. Are there any other suggested modifications to the agenda? Anyone here who would like to see an agenda item moved up or down? Is there a motion to approve the agenda as revised or modified? Trustee Kopisch, second. Trustee Dart, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Are there any announcements this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to our presentation on the Packer Heritage Trail. Please.
My name is Cliff Crystal, president of the Packers Heritage Trail Foundation. I guess the person that created the trail. And I assume that I was invited because there's some interest in our trail with some of the locations we have in Alloy. Let me just give you a little bit of background. The trail is has been up since June of last year. We have 22 commemorative plaques that were installed that we raised money. Scott King, Nicolay Bank was a fundraiser, and he and I basically went out and found sponsors for all 22 commemorative plaques. Sponsorships were $10,000, which pretty much covered the cost of the plaques. 21 of those are in downtown Green Bay. There's one at St. Norbert. What we did was we created a city walk, which 17 of those sites, most related to Packer history. I mean, there's a plaque at Hagemeister Park about downtown Green Bay and some things like that. But basically, we patterned that after the Freedom Trail. Because there were some other sites that I know are popular with fans, we created what we call two bike spurs. One is a packing plant spur, where you start near East High School on that blacktop trail, and you can go out to the packing plant area. And we have four plaques out that way. Basically, it goes around the Riverside Ballroom, across the Main Street, Elizabeth, and the packing plant is back there. And then we also created, because St. Norbert was involved with St. Norbert at the time in a book, and we've discussed them publishing a souvenir guide for our trail. We put up a plaque at St. Norbert. And because of that, we created what we call the Lambo Lombardi Spur, and we bill it as a bike spur. Probably most people are visiting our trail, are walking maybe the downtown area, driving the cars out to the city stadium and out to that area around the riverside. Certainly nobody's walking to St. Norbert. Probably very few people are biking because it's not easy getting through the pier. But as part of that plan, we created stops. The first one along that Fox River Trail was the Curly Lambo's gravesite. So basically our design as people started the Fox River Trail downtown Green Bay, Portlier and Adams, going up the hill by Alloway Avenue to Curly's gravesite, and coming back down, stopping at three homes in that old Alloway area, two on Miramar and one on Mission. And then continuing down Ducharme to Lazar, and that would just, if they were to go up to Curly's gravesite, it was a much prettier ride going down Ducharme to Lazar and then back onto the trail, plus probably more convenient than trying to cross anywhere else on Riverside, if they actually were going to bike. And then continuing on to Vince Lombardi's home on Sunset, which also was an alley, and then to the pier, and we noted the Union Hotel and Century Lanes and East of Pier, and then the plaque is in St. Albert. So if what we have in Alloway are those, is the gravesite and Lambo's former home, probably two of the most popular tourists, for Packer fans, probably two of the most popular stops. I mean, Lombardi's home, they've gone and visited for years, and I've had to stop at Lambo's gravesite to shoot pictures and checking some mileage from site to site, probably 7-10 times in the last 2 years. And it's surprising how many times there's somebody else there looking at that gravesite. I don't know if you've seen our plaza that was dedicated Saturday. It's pretty spectacular. I've been to more than 100, probably more than 150 sports plazas in the country at stadiums, major college and professional stadiums in all 50 states, and I believe it's probably one of the most spectacular in the country. So, and since it opened and since we dedicated it, there have been people, milling around there almost every time I walk past or whatever. So I think the trail has created a lot of interest. This year, we also had a marketing company that we just let run with, they wanted to run trolleys from Lambeau Field during training camp, and it was a success, so they're continuing to do it. And they had over 750 riders this summer and fall so far. And as part of that, I suggested that they finish up by going out to Lombardi's home. So when they're taking that trolley tour, after seeing all those sites in downtown Green Bay, they are stopping, they're not stopping, they're going out to Miramar, taking a left, driving by Lambeau's home for a brief time in the early 30s, when he was very early in his marriage, to his first of three wives, and then Don Hudson's home, further east on Miramar, and then the rental property at the corner of Mission and Ducharme that Lombardi lived in when he first moved to Green Bay, which was through my backyard because I was a 12-year-old boy at the time living on Miramar. And then down Ducharme, so they see a good chunk of that beautiful residential area, and then to Lombardi's home. Anyway, if Alloway is interested, we would be interested in putting up plaques commemorating Lombardi's home and Lambeau's gravesite. I don't think we'd be interested in doing the homes. And that's just not practical. We have stops, or we point out on our website. We point out on our website other locations where Packers, like the YMCA doesn't have a plaque, but that's where the black players, first black players played to the Packers live. It's the only place they could find housing. But we would be interested. It would kind of link everything with St. Norbert, and the Union Hotel is an interest. So we would create that bike, what we call a bike spur. Again, a lot of people are going to drive to those locations. And it would give us four stops. And those probably would be the final plaques we'd be interested in putting up. And to be honest, there's just a few of us working on this project. And we're kind of taking it step by step and trying to do things right. So I think, if we were going to get involved, I guess we'd want people of Alloway to agree to something. And then we might assist in finding a sponsor, or we could help along those lines. We'd certainly write the plaque, follow the same procedures we did with the ones in downtown Green Bay. Problem is, you got a cemetery and a house. I'm guessing nobody ever, 100% of the people don't all ever agree on something, so I'm sure those would be controversial. Maybe something you can't even do because of zoning regulations or whatever. Put up a plaque in somebody's front yard in Sunset Circle or one in the alley cemetery. But I think there are alternatives, you know, depending on how the village feels about the trail and the use it gets. There certainly is in that packing plant spur, for example, and out in Green Bay, the packing plant faces Morrow Street between Elizabeth and Dan's. I mean, that's a heavily traveled section of road, heavy trucks, not a place you want people walking or stopping. So we put that plaque up at the start where the sign is for the Crest Trail, and they can see the packing plant from the back about eighth of a mile or eight-tenths of a mile, half a mile down that trail. We also put up one for the Packers practice fields at the start of the trail north of City Stadium, and then the practice fields are in the back of Joanne Stadium. So it would be possible to put two along the trail. The picture of Lambeau's gravesite or picture from the funeral, direct people up to the cemetery. The other option would be further south, you know, somewhere around that park. Is that Sunlight Park? Behind the park along the trail there, right, before you get to the boat dock.
Yep.
You can put someone in that area. I believe the village limits are shortly thereafter and before the boat dock, so we recommend people go down to the boat dock, go up and take the sidewalk back to Sunlight Park.
We will be building a trail connection roughly from Lombardi's house to the trail right there. So that might be
the park.
Yeah, or you can put it up anywhere in the park.
Right.
But I think it would be a great thing for the trail. I think certainly if that plaque was toward the east end of the park, closer to the home, you know, the people running the trolley tours might consider having people stop at the park and look at the... We were real careful about the home. I talked to the owner when we put it on our website. And he said, hey, people stop here all the time. And I don't know that we brought a whole lot of traffic. Also, the trolley, people who run the trolley tours had motor coach tours, and they did not take them up Miramar, down Ducharme, just because of the fact it was a residential neighborhood. So I think we've been sensitive to the fact that you don't want buses rolling down those streets, mm-hmm, with kids playing and things like that. But I think it could be a boon to the trail. Anybody has any questions or...
Really appreciate your efforts. I was able to go to the ceremony on Saturday. It was quite impressive. So
thank you.
Beautiful. Very good job.
Is Bart Starr really tipped off?
No, we're actually putting up a statue of Starr. We got sponsors.
It's teasing.
Yeah, no.
I didn't use the word that he used.
Yeah, no. It should be installed by Thanksgiving Weather Committee.
Any questions?
No, you're just a fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Now, the cemetery, is that Catholic cemetery, Alloway Catholic Cemetery, whatever, would they have an opinion? I don't know. And like you said, the homeowners.
Yeah, I think we're at the stage where if the village was really seriously interested, our preference would be settle on a site that people in the village would be okay with.
It could even be a boon to the business down there by the Mariner then.
Mm-hmm.
Did they ever put something out on the trail again, like they did with the previous owners, and pull people off the trail towards the cemetery? Might stop it.
And there's a historic plaque for the first church right along Riverside Drive at the edge of the cemetery.
What's that?
There's a current plaque and display or whatever right at the edge of the cemetery on Riverside, almost across from Twiggs, that talks about the first Catholic Church, I think St. John the Evangelist or something, was located near that site. So there's a permanent historical plaque there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we direct people on our website. Probably should have illustrated that better out here. But if you could go to trail sites, I think that's... anyway, why don't you go down? See, those are the two spurs. Mm-hmm. So when there's a plaque, that's where we have plaques, and the other places we don't. So I would say there's, from what I've looked at this, and I looked at it when we first started, wondering, well, could we put one up? You know, at the corner of, it would be the northeast corner of Riverside and Alloway Avenue. At that corner, we have people enter, if people are on bikes, we instruct them to enter the cemetery at the first left after they turn off Riverside. And from there, they can make a little curve to the right and basically go up without a lot of trouble to get to Lambeau's gravesite. You know, so... if people are entering down there, I don't know if the cemetery would be receptive to... we never asked. Would they be receptive to putting a plaque in that area? Or the other option would be down at the, you know, at the foot of the Mariner, where you go up that hill. I don't know. Does the village still have any plans to try to make it easier for people to get from Alloway Avenue to the trail?
I think with the Riverside reconstruction, there'll be... consideration that's a couple years out yet.
There's the one that's from Webster Avenue down to the Fox River Trail. Utilizing the 172 off ramp.
Oh, okay.
By Heritage Hill.
Heritage Hill.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, they probably want to go up, but that certainly would help them maybe return to the trail. Mm-hmm. But again, that's... people are actually biking. That's a beautiful stretch of residential, you know, residential area down to Sherman Lazar, and I do think, I mean, obviously that can't, those plaques can't be too close to the trail, and that strip is pretty narrow by the parking lot. It's also narrow at points between the trail and the river, but I think if I looked a few weeks ago after I was asked, you know, notified that there was some interest here, I think there is a place there that you could put a plaque up on the trail. And then another one, if you wanted to do it on the trail, then I'd suggest probably putting the one up near Lombardi's home, especially maybe right wherever that, if you're going to connect Sunlight to the Sunset Circle to the trail, with a strip of blacktop to that park, you know, right wherever that strip begins or ends. And we can include on the plaque, as we did on some of those others, that Lombardi's home is 500 feet to the east. Follow the blacktop trail to the right. I mean, it'd be pretty simple, and it wouldn't eat up a lot of words in the plaque. So it's doable. Mm-hmm. I think the easiest course of action would be to try to do it on the trail. I mean, I'm assuming there's no way we would be allowed to put up a plaque on the front lawn of the home on Sunset Circle, correct?
Not without the resident's permission. And if the resident moves, then you've got... Yeah.
Well, I think the resident, the current resident, might
welcome it.
Yeah, he might be... Well, his son...
A box there for coins?
Yeah, but... you know, I remember with somebody saying that there was speculation too that at some point that house could be sold for much more than value just because it was in there. And somebody even said to me they wouldn't be surprised if it was turned into a museum. Again, I find that My guess is that's probably unlikely, but I don't really have any grounds for that. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Sure.
Did the present owner of Lombardi's house indicate he had an objection to the sign, or what? If I lived there, I'd like to have a sign up there.
Yeah, I didn't ask. I talked to the son. I just told him we were going to include that on our website with an address for people to drive by. He was fine with that. So, I don't know. Does that fall? I mean, are there zoning restrictions or whatever that would prevent somebody from putting up a historical? I think there's a little, I grew up on Miramar, and I think there's a little plaque somewhere on Mission, right?
There is. Yeah. A stone.
Or something?
Mm-hmm. The first Mission Church.
Or is that, something that...
It doesn't seem like there should be, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's a stone with a plaque.
You can wrap a stone with some writing on it in your yard if you want. Sure. As long as it's not off-site advertising for something else.
There's a place somewhere out, I'm trying to remember where it is, where there's a designation. Maybe an alley, I don't know, but I'm trying to remember where it is. But you can always go to the zoning board of appeals and get a waiver. But as Steve just said, if you want to put a sign and some writing on it, designate something about that property. I don't think the zoning code prohibits it.
I've seen lawn ornaments that are worse than that.
Could we use the right of way for that? We still probably get the homeowner's consent, but could we install something like that within the village's right-of-way?
Yeah, you can do something on the right-of-way, but you really should get the homeowner's consent. But it could be something lower as well, too. It wouldn't have to be real tall. It could be lower to the ground so it doesn't obstruct view. Yeah, there's options.
Now, there's a couple of huge trees in that front yard. You could put it right in front of a tree, So it wouldn't block much more than the big tree. So I guess we're interested if you want, and we would probably, the Union Hotel, we'd probably put one up then at the Union Hotel, and that would probably be the end of the, it would be the final three plaques we put up. I'm guessing finding a sponsor wouldn't be terribly difficult. We would, I think, be willing to assist doing that. Maybe we could even find them on our own.
Maybe the owner.
Yeah, I would think that might be questionable at the home, but the one at the cemetery, if it's on the trail. And I think there's a company pretty close to where that would go that might have some interest. And we worked through the Norbertines for the plaque at St. Edward College and St. Willibrord, and they were extremely receptive to our request that we put a plaque there. Now, with the diocese, Compass carried a story about how excited they were about the plaques that were put up there. So would this diocese be receptive to putting up a plaque maybe somewhere in just off Alloway Avenue?
Bishop Charity money.
Again, that's such a busy intersection. You can't have it where people are parking on Alloway Avenue close to Riverside Drive. That just wouldn't make sense. But if there was some spot set back, or we could redirect people up the hill to maybe one of those garages at the entrance, but one of those entrances on Alloway Avenue. Mm-hmm. So if there's real serious interest and you guys have connections to the diocese, I assume manages the cemetery.
I want to talk to the residents in that area too.
Yeah.
We're doing things to basically increase the traffic.
Yeah.
Through any neighborhood, especially traffic that stops and parks in front of their yard, I'd want to at least have a listening session to get their feedback. Trustee Gass.
No, I think it's definitely worth exploring, but I don't foresee the board, you know, taking the laboring, or maybe it's something that we referred to Parks and Rec, for example, and maybe they could look at placement of these and work with the board to maybe, you know, reach out, you know, figure out who best to reach out perhaps to the diocese to see if, because I like the idea, you know, we need to figure out where to put it so it moves forward. You think Park and Rec would be a good place for it?
Sure.
I appeared before, I think, your Economic Development Committee, mm-hmm. Marco Linichek had, yeah. That was a year ago, and there seemed to be quite a bit of interest. And I kind of said the same thing to them at that time, you know, gauge the kind of interest there is and what where the possibilities would be of putting a plaque, and didn't hear back, and kind of thought
actually,
I would.
Actually, that's why you're invited back here, because Mark brought it up at our last economic development meeting and thought it should be shared with the board.
Yeah, I grew up in Alloy, so I'm pretty familiar with the territory. And, you know, even if it was just on the trail, I think it would be a great thing for the people that use that trail.
Good. Any further questions?
Good. Thanks so much for your
patience. Thank you.
Thank you for the project.
Comment for your benefit, and Brad probably knows this. I don't know if the ownership in that neighborhood has changed on Lombardi's House, but when the park department proposed to put up a park bench there years ago, it was all kinds of static, and we ultimately put that bench in there, and maybe some of the owners have changed. So I'm just...
I kind of expect that. I mean, I just... you guys know better than anybody. Nobody agrees on getting more than 55% of the people agree on anything.
Yeah, 55. That's pretty high.
50.2?
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kim.
Thanks, Clay.
Public appearances. Is there anyone you'd like to speak this evening? You can speak on any issue that you wish. We only can take action on items listed under the business section of the agenda. Yes, sir.
Clarence, I'm too brief. 26A South First Avenue. My original intent coming here tonight is just check out this device. I checked it out without you here. Sounded pretty good. It's working good tonight. Vast improvement. So, however, in the meantime, two items on the agenda spark my interest.
Okay.
So I will address them. Unfortunately, Tracy's not here because I have a very big problem with item number. Where is it? 6. Why would you need to hire a consultant to do that project? The administrator and a clerk and staff person could easily do that. I could do it for 1/5. I don't want to do it. I could do it for 1/5 of the cost. It wouldn't come nice and gifly out, but the meat and potatoes are there. All you have to do is I think, 9 metro communities that you'd have to survey a canvas and then see what they're doing and put it together and summarize it and then do what you think is best for the village. Again, historical perspective. Way back when, there was no policy at all. But I would say the majority of our department heads put in extra hours without compensation. They considered it part of the job and it kind of evolved later on. And it was a kind of a gentleman's, it's not a woman's agreement. You need a little time, you put in extra time, you did it. If you had to bring a kid to a dentist appointment, fine. Then in subsequent years, it became a little bit more formalized as things changed. And then the one term I served on the board, the then administrator, was extremely liberal, and he was allowing one department head to convert time into additional vacation time, which I had objection to. And then we modified it. I don't know what's in place at the current time. But at that time, we curtailed it. So I think it was like half a day you could take at a time. City of Green Bay at the time was allowing comparable time off, but they had to use it within the next pay period. That might have been too strict. So anyhow, I don't think you have to pay a consultant $6,000 to develop a plan for this. He should be able to do it to his staff. So before you act on it, I hope you'll consider that. I think it's a waste of money. You don't need it. With all due respect, if you're going to spend that kind of money for a consultant, I have an opinion. You might be better off to have a retreat on a Saturday, full day for the board and staff, and go somewhere and hide and get a facilitator and address your internal morale problems, which still exist. That would be much better spending of the money, as far as I'm concerned. The other item has to do with the Hoffman Road reconstruction project, and I just gave my input. I spoke to Craig very briefly before, and whether you're going to have curb and gutter, if you have curb and gutter, whether you're going to assess for it. In my opinion, you should assess for it. We already have deviated from past practices regarding sidewalks. I have some problems with that. I don't think that those should be being called at large. There should be a partial assessment, so that addresses. And then, half kiddingly, I asked him, are we going to then put a realistic speed limit on that road? That speed was politically set a number of years ago. Well, my objection is totally artificial. Nobody travels 25 miles an hour. And yet this is established going around. So that's it for tonight, folks. Any reaction to my comments regarding that paid time off study?
I think you'll probably hear them when we discuss it and when the agenda item comes up.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid we'll wait for that one. Then I'm going to go take my wife out to dinner. Thanks for these.
Yeah. You can't take that with you, by the way.
I know that. Well, I'm working on for the church, which Penny knows about. And that one I'm probably going to buy myself so I can keep it. I have a question for Brad. Are these not required for public facilities by the Disabilities Act? Yeah, I thought so. Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
I'm Jim O'Rourke, and I just wanted to say that I support the Heritage Trail, the Packer Heritage Trail that Cliff just presented. I'm on several historic committees, including the Fox Wisconsin Heritage Parkway, which is working on branding of the riverfront communities. And I think that the Lambeau and Lombardi story for Alloway are some of our best branding opportunities here. And they particularly bring great credit to East High School with regards to that story, both the Lombardi and the Lambeau story. So I'd like to see progress on seeing how we can tie together these stories and promote East High School as part of the whole branding initiative. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 6, action regarding the contract with Patrick Glenn from... Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Old number 9, action regarding the appointment of members to the Green Bay Metro Fire Advisory Board.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I believe you received a memo, so I'll just kind of briefly go over what we're doing here this evening. As a part of the contract with the merger of the fire departments, we agreed that we would have an advisory board that would be made up of 2 appointees from the village, 2 appointees from the city, and 1 disinterested fire professional. Disinterested being a legal term. The person that I'm this evening is quite interested. So I found that to be a funny word. But anyway, so and hopefully everybody understands kind of what that's all about. But we just wanted to have an independent body that we could go to if we just needed to iron some things out, if there was any, they're in place for dispute resolution. I don't anticipate us having a lot of disputes, but they're there for that. And other than that, once we get these people introduced to each other, they will basically operate independently. They will be able to meet when they choose, ask for what information they want to, and oversee how the merger's going, ask what questions they would like to do, and that kind of thing. So the appointees that are being submitted to you from the village, I'm sure you're familiar with them. They are both former commission members and seem to be very qualified people, so Steve Perry and Jordan Steele. And then the name that I'm submitting to you for the disinterested fire professional is Len Vanderweiss. Now, Len is currently the interim chief in Appleton. Len has had a long career in fire service. He started in Appleton. He spent 14 years there. He became the fire chief in Antigo. Later on, he became the fire chief in Nina and then oversaw the merger of the Nina Menasha Fire Department. So he has quite a bit of experience in the merged departments and brings a lot of valuable knowledge there to that. And then most recently was the fire chief in Appleton, where he retired but is serving as interim until they're able to place someone else in the position. So Len is a great guy. I think Tracy knows Len, a very qualified candidate to put forward to you. So unless you have any questions, I would submit for your approval this evening Steve Perry, Jordan Steele, and then Len Vanderweist.
I have a question for you. Was Len found through Tracy? Did she sort of...
Actually, I came up with Len and talked to Tracy about it, and when I mentioned the name, she said, well, I know Len very well. She agreed that he was a good guy, so then I contacted Len and asked him if he would be interested in it, and he was. So it was kind of a joint decision.
Okay. Trustee Kopisch?
Yeah, just out of curiosity, the Green Bay representatives... Have they been identified yet?
They have, and I was going to get to that after took your action. I will also tell you who we've got from our end, so I'll let you do...
You want to know that before
unless
we go?
You want, unless you'd like to know first. I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but I can give you that right now.
Sure.
Okay. The two representatives that from the Green Bay end, one will be David Running. David is a 30-year resident of Green Bay. He retired from the University of Wisconsin Extension. He's got a degree in agriculture, a master's in guidance and counseling, and also done some work in criminal justice. Married, father of two daughters, grandfather. He works for the Fair Association. He does volunteer work for Ascension Lutheran Church. Happens to be one of my neighbors. Very well-spoken, very intelligent man, and I think will be a great asset to the committee. And the other representative, it may be a little bit of a surprise to you, but Division Chief Ann Waska has submitted her retirement papers and has indicated that now that she's not on the fire department, she would be very interested in doing this. And I can't think of anybody that would be better to do that. She started her career here in Alloway, obviously rose to the top in our department, and would be a great asset to that advisory board. So it will be Mr. Running and Ann.
And what about the disinterested? Does there need to be a disinterested party? In
no, there's only one. That's a joint dissent. Yeah, everybody's interested, but Chief Vanderweiss would be the one individual that we both agree on.
Fair enough. Is there a motion with regard to this item, Trustee Kopisch?
I would move to approve the appointments of Steve Perry, Jordan Steele.
And Len. Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, and just so you know how I'll proceed from here, I will set up an arrangement where we can get everybody introduced to each other and get this thing off the ground, kind of facilitate the first meeting, and from that point forward, they'll kind of run on their own and elect the chairman and do those kind of things. So that's where we'll go next. So thank you.
Well, and if you could thank Anne, I mean, she did such a wonderful job, you know, kind of being a liaison, you know, when she was involved during the merger. It's a loss to your department.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it because it is. She's been an integral part of what we do for a long time. So I hate to see her go, but everybody makes that decision at some point in their life. And the timing-wise, I'm thrilled that she's going to be able to be involved in this. So
thank you as well. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. All right, now item 6. Action regarding contract with Patrick Leonard from Carlson Detman Consulting regarding PTO. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Zeller?
I'd like to make some comments before a motion is made, but okay. If you would prefer that we wait.
Unless the board has objections?
No.
Okay.
So the comments that I have are certainly not regarding the gentleman's qualifications or his experience in this field. I, you know, based on his presentation to us, I think he would be more than capable to do the job and do a fine job on this. But my research on the PTO and in speaking with a few other folks about this, I took our most current roster of employees to determine how many full-time employees, how many part-time employees we have, and take that number, divide it into $5,400. And right now we have 28 full-time employees and one part-time employee, according to what I could determine. And so it's almost $190 per employee to engage this gentleman for this one human resource advisement for the PTO determination. And I agree with Clarence that I don't see why we can't do this as a board with our department head or with the village administrator to determine how many hours we feel are appropriate for PTO, and then to be able to communicate to the employees how this program is going to work. I just feel this we should be able to do this internally prior to January 1, so I'm not going to support a motion to hire him.
Okay, any other comments? Trustee Gans?
I agree with Paul. Yeah, I think it's a fair amount of money. And I think we could do it internally. And a lot of this is not recreating the wheel. Right? There's a number of municipalities that have policies and programs in place, and we should at least take a look at those first to see if we can pattern our program on a pre-existing one. So I wouldn't be in favor of a motion to approve the consulting contract. And I agree with Paul, too. It's not to say that this man's not competent, and his company's not competent. They indeed are. I think it's something we could probably handle internally for the cost.
Yeah, a little bit of history. If you remember, this was supposed to be a free service when the man worked, I think, for the county. Some public sector, and then he switched jobs between that time and the time that he came, and now works for a consulting company. So I can understand and I agree with the shock of going from nothing to $5,400. You do realize we've set January 1st as the deadline for this, so it will take some commitment not only on the part of the board, but on the part of the village administrator, and we are heading into budget season very, very rapidly. So if we decide we don't want to pay this price, it's going to mean that we are going to have to be committed to gathering extensively throughout the fall to get this done in addition to the budget sessions.
Could you refresh me on the urgency for January?
Well, we've told the employees, one, that we're going to button this thing up. And if you remember, a lot of the other issues in the personnel manual are related to this. And so we wanted to button all of these issues up together and have it be effective January 1st. We've been working with sort of an interim, relatively half-baked personnel manual, and I think it's time that we give the employees a clear indication of what the rules are as we move forward. So that's the deadline that we set for ourselves, and we gave ourselves a year to do it. I think it was a year, is that right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see it go past January 1st. We need to get this buttoned up. So that's the only urgency, Trustee Gilbertson. Yes, Trustee Edwards.
In the administrator's absence, could we ask the two supervisors that are here, department heads, whatever, three, what do you think? Think we can pull this together? Is that a no?
Nice.
I think we could work on it, and in regards to, I mean, what Clarence talked about earlier, the surveys of similar communities, we actually recently did get back some survey results. Village of Howard, I think, contracted with someone to do a survey of similar communities, and that was various payroll data and information on PTO policies or lack thereof. So we do have some of that information in a raw form.
Are they going to charge us for it?
No.
Oh, good.
Good question.
Nice. Open records request.
And we will promise to show up to the meetings that we make. I have to publicly apologize. There was a meeting yesterday morning. Was it yesterday morning?
Yes.
And I told them I could be there, and I intended on being there, and I wasn't there. So I apologize for that. We ended up not having a quorum, so we have to reschedule the meeting.
You missed a very informative presentation as well.
By whom?
On the audit. On Monday morning.
Did he give the presentation?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, he did? Okay.
The problem with the PTO or the modified approach is it's September 17th. Mm-hmm. Basically, we're trying to wrap up our budgets on or about October 1. Now, there's a little bit of a time window there if you're adjusting, the cost of vacation and sick leave and things of that sort. But that is a big part of the budget, and that is a computer model that's quite a bit of work. So no matter what you do, there's not much time to do it right now, unless it's a minor modification with maybe something later that's much larger. That's just something to think about because of the timetable we're following.
But is that a staff issue that we'd have to do either way, whether the consultant's involved or not?
Timetable-wise, we're
kind of out of time.
Budget season is a budget season.
Yeah, we're probably beyond just my comment. I mean, everybody else maybe doesn't feel the same way, but time-wise, this is probably beyond the point where we can make serious modifications to the costs in the budget because of the amount of work that's involved to get it done. So it's
we asked the consultant about that, though, too, and he said that he thought we could make it. I mean, that's why we're having this conversation. But
it might be the consultant's view. I'm talking about the budget part that we have to do. Because basically, we have to complete our budgets.
Right.
What you do with PTO could be a major impact on the labor part of the budget, which is that's half of the budget. I mean, in terms of all the computing and the inputs and all the changes that takes place, that's a big impact. So it would be very difficult.
When does the budget have to be completely zipped up? That's not until November.
So it moves on to the processing steps where you get your copies and get into the discussions with you as a board and finalize that, and then on to the official meetings in November to approve the budget.
Yeah, well, we've made some pretty significant, I know that labor is a large part of the budget, but we've made some pretty significant changes to the budget even after it's come to us, so it's not like it has to be, it's not like it's been completely buttoned up before. I mean, there are modifications post-hoc.
That's true, but those are generally things like adding a capital project of so many dollars or modifying budget line items of specific things that are specific items in the budget, but if you're going to impact all the labor costs, that's a different animal.
So, Clara, I have a question for you then. If we do certain rules with regard to PTO, or we go down one road or another, is there sort of a system in a series of spreadsheets or something where there you make the modifications, or is it lots of manual entry into multiple places?
There's a large amount of work done to get the labor costs in place for the next year, which has all been completed, which we all then manually input into our own separate budgets. And that's kind of the first step, because based off of what you have in your labor, what you have left over. So I would agree with Craig, it would be a significant change.
Maybe during budget, I'd like to know a little bit more about this. When we meet for the budget, if you could spend, I know it's not going to do it justice, 15 minutes to a half hour to tell. Just, I'd like to be educated on what that involves when you have to change certain factors within the budget. Because, I sit in these budget meetings thinking, well, sky's the limit, right? We just need to decide what we want to change and what we don't. But if it's not that easy, I want to know kind of how it's built.
And I think looking through the different spreadsheets that are put together makes it easier to understand something to go over.
Okay.
I probably won't understand it the first time on this, but forewarn you. Trustee Dart.
As far as the whole PTO thing, do you think, and I'm asking to all three of you, that the bigger issue isn't the PTO, but how to transition from where we are to where we want to be? Developing a plan itself doesn't seem like it would be that difficult if we were starting from zero, but to deliver something that isn't going to upset the employees any more than they have been in the last couple of years is going to be the trick. And we talk about, internal problems and so forth, Clarence mentioned, but a lot of them have to do with external influences, I think, and this would just be another one.
So what I hear you saying is, and if Penny is right, that we really have to think about the transition, that we could probably think about this, there not being large-scale changes to this starting January 1st of 2014. We should be looking more, if we're going to do any large-scale changes, to January 1st, 2015. Is that what I hear you saying? Craig's nodding his head.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Clara, do you agree with that? That it would be a...
Yeah, I think something that we could put together until we transition into...
So that will factor into the decision of the board, that if we have longer than we thought, then why would we hire a consultant now if we have basically a year and a half to get this right? That's a lot of time for the board to be able to convene and think about it. The problem is I don't want there to be another year of a personnel manual that's sort of in transition.
Yeah, but we're maintaining the status quo.
I understand.
Well, perhaps we could set the goal as June 30th with of being complete, but not transition till the end of the year.
Right.
And that way, if... if
but even then, the transition won't take place for... there'll be a whole other year of...
But at least people get time to get used to the idea, and we get time to get it done, and we also set a deadline for ourselves that isn't a year out. It's because otherwise it'll be October, and then...
Do we have to make the transition to start on at the beginning of the fiscal year? Is there a reason we couldn't start July 1st with the actual implementation?
If there's cost impacts, it should be incorporated into the budget. So it does impact next year's budget.
Right, so you still have to do the same process, it's just the numbers would be different.
But if we had a policy in place June 30th,
to start
implemented January 1st,
right.
So that way everyone knows for 6 months what it's going to be.
Right.
We can budget for it on the 20th.
But we're still without anything changing in any major way for another year. We're basically postponing the implementation for another year.
I think you've already addressed one issue, at least informally as a board you've addressed it, which was a concern of staff, which is, you have accumulated sick leave. It isn't the board's intent to take it away. And that was a concern that people had. So that's one step in this process. I know that one of your concerns is the future cost of sick leave. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an issue. That's probably the biggest issue in the whole thing, to be honest with you. At least from what I see, I think that's probably the issue that you view as the most significant issue because it's a cost impact. But I think that's an issue that, whether it's PTO or some modified approach, that can be explored and you can reach a solution on that. And then there's the other ones we talked about before, which is if we're going to modify and maybe standardize the vacation policy through the whole organization, that's another one that can be addressed. And both of these are going to take a little bit of time to do and to compare the couple of options. But honestly, we can compare those options and come up with that information. But that timeline would be such that you would be able to put this into certainly the January 2015, have it in place, have it as part of the budget that they have it in place.
Right. So the timeline's related to this, but we need to make a decision. I mean, it's related to, but still separate from the decision about whether or not to hire a consultant. It just tells us that if we're going to do it ourselves, we have more time than we thought we did. Trustee Zeller.
I wanted to bring that item up, or that the agenda item specifically addresses whether this consultant is hired. So as one board member, I would not vote to postpone the PTO implementation until January 15th, but we can't do that because it's not an agenda item.
Right.
So our discussion with regards to postponement would have to take place in another board meeting.
Yeah, I have no intention of entertaining a motion with regard to the deadline,
yeah.
But how we're sort of feeling about the deadline, the fact that we could, the staff seems to think that we couldn't make it in time for this year anyway, has implications for how people might vote with regard to the consultant. If they're feeling like we need to get this done and we don't have time as a board to be convening intensely between now and November when the budget has to be wrapped up, they might vote one way. If they know there's at least the option of us having a full year to do this until next summer before we start to talk about implementation, they might vote a different way. So that's the only reason we're talking about it.
The approach I would suggest is that if we are going to address this as a separate meeting, which would be wise, that each of us as board members come to that meeting with a number in mind for each of the categories. And that's the way we would need to treat this. A certain number of PTO days for sick leave, a certain number of PTO days for vacation, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know why we couldn't come to some type of agreement in one meeting on what the board would want to offer to the employees. So I just don't see why this is such a monumental task. I understand the accounting side of things, but we have personnel accounting software that takes all the deductions off of the gross pay to come to net pay, and as far as tracking those types of things, I don't see why we couldn't do this by January 1. And as far as budgeting goes, if the department heads bring to the budget the status quo, then we know what we're working off of. They can assume the status quo for budget purposes. And then as we approach a decision on this, then that can be worked into
the budget.
The budget.
Well, that's the question that I asked.
This is the time to do it. You know, this is the time to do it. I see no reason to put this off for another year and a half or another year and a quarter. It's, you know, the employees have been waiting for us to pound out this manual for at least a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in favor. I don't know why we just can't come together as seven board members and work this thing out. And then the whole, you know, communication with the employees and leading them through it. I mean, do we need kid gloves to bring this through to the employees? And I don't understand the how we need to, in this case on the agenda, have a consultant that needs to be the liaison to bring this new idea to the employees. I mean, this is the way things are going. The employees have to understand that there will be changes and that this is a type of change that needs to be made and it's going to be done. I have a problem with the process of, do we have to do an education process and hold the employees' hands through each one of these changes? So that's where I'm coming from. I see no reason to postpone another 15 months on this.
Yeah, and that is another agenda item, and we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But what I hear you saying is you would disagree with what the Public Works Director and the Finance Director said in terms of the amount of work and whether we have time to actually do this before the budget needs to be submitted. Is that
for the department heads' purposes, I don't see why they can't just assume status quo to come up with their numbers, and then throughout the budget process, we made, as you said, so many changes throughout the process, and that's where I don't see a hang-up in making incorporating the the PTO into the budget process for a December, what is it, Debbie, the first week of December
first
budget.
We always do it the last week in November.
Budget hearing,
last
hearings
week in November,
of, November 30th or so it was last year. So
it's December, but they want to get the tax bills out, so we
right,
always do
yeah,
it the last
yeah,
week.
Okay. Trustee, or Trustee Gass?
I agree with Paul. I mean, I think last time we looked at this issue quite some time ago. I mean, in terms of the policy decision and what it should look like, we had lots of data. You know, I mean, we had, you know, what the different municipalities were doing and how they were doing it. We just didn't get our hands around where we, you know, what direction we wanted to march off on. I think if we could revisit that data sometime very soon, you know, as part of a special meeting, sometime between now and the first meeting in October, or maybe even in advance of the first meeting in October, maybe at 5 or 4:30, and get that data back in front of us, and I think we could, you know, probably make some intelligent choices on where we want to be, and then I think there would be sufficient time to have the financial ramifications percolate in through the budget, you know, because it'll already be drafted, as Paul alluded to, in a status quo fashion. And if it's really about what policy do we want to have. And there were two or three different options, as I recall, the charts that we looked at. You know, one of which was, we don't call it vacation and we don't call it sick time. You just get X number of personal days a year and call them what you want. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the options. And then there was a hybrid or a couple of hybrids. But I think if we get all that data back in front of us and maybe even update that data to make sure that the municipality references that are on there are actually still doing what they said they were doing a year or so back, then we can at least make an intelligent decision in terms of whether we can make that policy decision now and get it in place by January 1. I think it's feasible. And if we get that information in front of us and say it probably can't happen, but maybe could happen by July 1, then that's something we take a look at too. But we should meet sometime the next couple of weeks before the next meeting, or at the next meeting in advance of it, you know, and take a look at all that data again and refresh ourselves, because it's been a while since we've all looked at it.
Right. I don't know the answer to this question, because I, like I said, I don't know the specifics of changing the labor portion of the budget. And if it is a, you know, 18-hour task in order to make these adjustments, and then we're kind of incorporating it into the budget process, and come mid-November we decide on what option we want and have to make large-scale changes. I just don't want to put the staff in a position where... So, you know, I'm all for going ahead and shooting for implementation for January 1st, because, like I said, I want to zip this thing up and have real rules for the employees that have been waiting for a long time. However, I don't want a finance director who's going to quit because we're driving her crazy, changing things constantly through the budget process, and having her do and redo things if it's extremely labor-intensive. So we're going to have to be in communication. Claire, you're going to have to let us know a timeline for this, if we're going to do it, and exactly what decisions that we have to make when, in order for you to get your work done without having to...
I'd just like to remind everyone that Claire's person that assisted her with payroll, wages, and benefits has left.
That's true.
And this would be a big thing that she could move. And this is Claire's first budget with us. And I don't know if that's fair to put that all on her.
Well, I say we should just have a meeting sometime in the next week or two to figure out how big of a deal it is and where we're thinking of marching off to, and then we can sort out the logistics of it, you know, whether it's feasible or not feasible by January 1. But I think the board's got to get our arms around it first before we can figure out whether it's too overwhelming of a task to be done, you know, before the budget's done.
Do we have access to data that we need to make the decision about PTO in a pretty timely fashion? You mentioned the study that was done.
The data that we're collecting. You mean what other similar size communities are doing?
Yes, you mentioned before some data that Howard has or something.
Yeah, we have that for, I think it's about 10 municipalities throughout the state that were selected because they're comparable to Alloy in size and structure. We do have that, the raw data from each community back, so I just have to compile it.
Okay.
Well, and then the last time we looked at it, we did have some nice charts as well. I don't know where mine is anymore. It's in a file someplace. But I mean, we had all the municipalities in columns, and they explain what each one of them did. We'll have to revisit, you know, that document as well.
All right, we're not voting on the timeline right now, but Clara, does it make sense? Can you provide us with information as to, if we were to shoot for January 1st, what is going to happen, have to happen by when, and what you need to be able to make this happen? As you said, it was close, and your inclination would be that it would be better implemented a year from January 1, 2015, but I'm getting the feeling from at least a few members of the board that we want to at least explore the possibility of shooting for January 1st.
Yeah, of course I can look into that. I know we're all kind of doing our budget stuff right now.
Do you need to make for...
I can certainly get together what I think would be needed. We're all doing our budget information right now. But as Paul said, yeah, we can maintain the status quo. It's just there will be significant revisions to it.
Right, and that's what I sort of want from you. If there are going to be significant revisions, if it's going to be part of the, we're going to maintain status quo going into budget, at which, you know, when do the budget dates need to be, and at what budget meeting? I think we already established those. Do we need to make a decision about that? I don't want us to be at our last budget meeting that we put on the schedule as optional, just in case we needed it, saying, all right, now we're going to decide on PTO, and there are going to be large-scale changes. And if that's just going to be impossible, we should know that now, not when we get to that point. So I want some indication from you that if we make a decision about PTO, when it has to be in order for you to make those adjustments.
And I guess that's something I have to think about.
Okay. I understand. Okay. All right. So the motion on the floor is with regard to the spending for the consultant. Is there any further discussion?
We have a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there a motion with regard to... That's right. Paul asked for some discussion before. Is there a motion with regard to item 6 regarding the contract with Patrick Glenn? Trustee Zeller?
I'll move not to proceed with contracting for the PTO service with Patrick Glenn.
Or any other consultant.
Okay.
Trustee Gass, do you second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 7, action regarding disallowance of claim WM 00510-20076. For insurance services. I think this is something that we asked to come back to us. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to disallow.
Is there a second? Trustee Genridge? Discussion? Trustee Zeller?
Could I ask Craig a question with regard to a sentence in the letter? There's a... I don't understand the meaning or where this is going. Where the insurance company has stated that the village had no advance notice of any issue that would impose a ministerial duty upon us. Further, the village had no advance notice of any issue that would impose a ministerial duty upon you. So, if this is regarding sewer backup, a sanitary sewer backup, am I thinking right on that sanitary sewer backup?
Yep.
Then would this have been a blockage that occurred in the village's portion of the sanitary sewer that would have then backed up just to this one resident? Then.
That could be the case, yes.
That it wouldn't have been on a main. It may have been on a lateral, but it would have been a lateral portion that would be within the village right away. Is that what I'm reading into this letter?
I think the point that they are making in the letter is that we had no advance notice of either a blockage in the main line or a blockage in our portion of the lateral. and not having knowledge of that, then our municipal exemption of liability would apply. But once we have knowledge of a problem of that sort, then we no longer have that municipal protection for liability. And that's what they're saying here. We didn't have prior knowledge, and therefore are not liable.
But the insinuation is it was on our property. It wasn't on the homeowner's property. They just said, hey, it's on your property, your fault. So the insinuation is it was somewhere in our system.
Right.
But
right.
We didn't fail to take care of the problem, nor did we have any forewarning that was going to happen. That's how I read it. Trustee Gass, is that?
Yeah, I mean, you're essentially right. I mean, there is two types of duties that a municipality has. One is a discretionary duty. I mean, legislative kind of things. We make decisions, and we can disagree, but ultimately we take action. We cannot be sued for anything that's within our discretion. It's only when something rises to the level of being a ministerial act, which means our duty is absolutely clear and it's spelled out. You know, and if we don't fulfill that, then we can be sued for that. And the way the law reads for these types of incidents is you've got to know with certainty that there is a particularized problem in your lines, and also know that it's going to cause problems to this particular resident before you actually have a ministerial duty to act, and if you fail, then it can be sued. I mean, we all want to have the best systems we can, but there is this whole discretionary immunity. And basically what our insurance company is saying is, look, we did not have the specific information necessary to translate this problem into a ministerial duty. And so therefore it's discretionary, and therefore we're immune, and that's why it should be denied.
What about processes we have for diagnosing problems? If we don't have very good processes for finding out whether or not there is a problem, can we be liable for that? So we don't know where there's a problem in our system, but we're not looking.
Because that would fall within the discretionary grant. That's a legislative decision whether you want to have such a detailed process to look at.
Cameras and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, I mean, if you had such a detailed process, I mean, conceivably it could, you know, create a ministerial duty. If your failure to abide by that very specific and detailed process wasn't complied with.
All right.
You know, but the immunity is there for, I think, a good reason. I mean, because, you know, we want to have the best system we can, but of course we have budgets and we have things. And you know, if liability, you know, would occur after every event like this, I mean, that's why the law was fashioned the way the law is. I mean, if you know it's going to be a problem, and you really know it's going to be a problem, and you don't act on it, then you do have a problem. But if you may have a problem, and we know we got some bad lines here and there, that's not good enough. That won't give us liability.
Trustee Zeller?
So, that being the case, that ignorance is sometimes in our favor then with regard to the infrastructure.
If I'm given time, I would come up with a much better way to say it, but yeah, you're essentially right.
Let me address that. One of the questions that comes up when we have a case like this is what do we do for maintenance of our sanitary sewer system? So we have to provide that to our insurance carrier to address the program that we follow to properly maintain the sanitary sewers. We have that program in place, and it is acceptable, and it meets the state requirements, and it is a good maintenance program. But what happens in a specific case like this is something happened here that we did not have knowledge of and would not have thought would have occurred, even though we have the proper maintenance program on a routine basis. And that's where that falls into that category that it's unexpected, and therefore it falls into this case where we didn't have prior knowledge.
Then are we reactive after the problem is discovered?
And it becomes part of an increased maintenance program with a change in our process to make sure that we don't have this happen again. Yes. to protect ourselves from future cases.
Sorry, can you say that again? If something like this happens, then what should...
Once we have knowledge that we have a problem in a sanitary sewer of some sort, whether it be grease or roots or some other thing, then we make sure that we increase the maintenance on that sewer segment so that we don't have that problem.
On that segment.
Okay. And that's what we have to do.
So we take care of the immediate problem, and then we go a step further to look at the general area,
yeah,
or that region.
Having been through a number of cases now like this and some other ones, auto accidents and other things, you know, there never really was a solid process to follow in terms of how we treat these cases, but we have that now, and we're very specific on how we handle these cases. We let the insurance companies do what the insurance companies do, and we let the legal people do what the legal people do, and we simply serve as the technical people. Here's the information. Here's the data. You make the decision you need to make. You make the decision you need to make, and we let the process work through. Rather than advising, rather than giving out information directly to the owner and so on and so forth, we're very specific on how we handle these cases, very specific on what I say here tonight,
mm-hmm,
because I have knowledge of the details of this case. So there are things I can't talk about because this is a public forum and those people can be involved in it. So.
But I ask the question because I want to make sure that the resident isn't shortchanged, that we are not... that we're not just leaning out on our immunity. I know we have this recreation immunity for park facilities,
right,
but with regards to this kind of thing, I think that the resident needs to get their hearing, or they need us to hear. And I guess what I'm hearing is that the insurance company did their diligence and has found that we didn't have a negligence in this case, so that we need to disallow so that the legal process can take its place.
You know, as a separate item, we should probably have a closed session sometime and talk about the process that we follow.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are things about the process that we follow that we're being advised on that would help you understand these claims. Because
mm-hmm,
one of the steps that takes place is, this is the first step, disallow the claim. And there's multiple reasons for that, but this is the first step in the process, is to disallow the claim.
I like that idea. I mean, we have a report on lateral replacement. It doesn't involve this,
yes,
this sort of thing, but I think we need to
get
some education on what processes we have in the village.
It would
so
help you to understand more about how we deal with this, because then you would understand the process a little bit better. And since you are dealing with residents,
right,
they call in with these kinds of issues, I think that would be helpful.
Yes.
And that way we'd all be on the same page.
Okay.
And with regard to the ignorance is bliss issue, it's sort of what I was asking when I was asking about process. Can we be sued for a process that we have or that we don't have? And Randy, you said, well, if we have a process, we have to follow it. You can be sued then. But there are some minimum standards. I mean, we have a process, and that process has to be vetted,
yes,
and accepted.
Yes.
So
if
it's
we
not like we can just say, you know what, we don't want to know anything about anything and close our eyes.
And that's a good way. I mean, we haven't closed our eyes.
Right.
I mean, we have processes in place and maintenance programs in place, and they're state accepted and state approved, and they're good processes. I mean, all this letter says is, with respect to this particular instance, we didn't have specific advance warning that there was going to be this problem. Because if you did have that specific advance notice, then we would have had to do something. But we didn't. And you know, despite compliance with our maintenance programs, it happened. And so, therefore, we're immune from suit. I mean, it's not ignorance, but we do have a plan in place. But with respect to this particular thing, we didn't have specific foreknowledge that it was going to happen.
And Craig, we have indeed increased our maintenance in that area. I mean, we took care of this. We followed our process, and we've done that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Trustee Kenridge.
Anybody had any contact with the homeowner? What's the mood of the homeowner? Looks like it was paid by her insurance, probably less a deductible. She okay with all that? I mean, we've heard nothing direct.
It's my understanding that the homeowner's insurance has covered this claim and that our insurance company paid the deductible for that homeowner's.
So the resident is out nothing at this point?
That's my understanding.
Grief or whatever. Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 8, action regarding the updating of Ordinance 11.03, definition of home occupation. I'm going to make a motion to postpone this until the next board meeting. Is there a second? Trustee Gass seconds. Discussion, Mark isn't here, and I'm not sure that he's completely finished. It was already on the agenda, so I thought we'd just leave it on there and postpone it instead of getting the votes to take it off the agenda and then noticing again. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 10, action regarding the approval of the payroll accounts payable position description. Do you want to hear from Clara before we vote, or would you like to, does someone have a motion? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to approve the position description.
Is there a second? Trustee Darth? Discussion? We're approving the position description. Are we approving the replacement of this person?
Just the salary range next, I believe.
We don't have somebody yet.
There's
right. Nobody in place.
I know, but are we approving what we had with the search for this position? There was talk at one time about whether or not we could hire out for this position at some point, and I don't think we've had that discussion.
To outsourcing payroll,
yeah.
We did kind of talk about that, and I consulted with a few other communities that have outsourced payroll, and it doesn't look like it would be any cost savings because we still need someone to do the accounts payable side and to handle kind of the HR stuff and the hiring stuff. So even if we did outsource, it would not really save.
Can we outsource all of that? My understanding of the motion is that we're approving the position description. I'm not understanding that we're approving actually commencing with a search for a replacement. Is that who? We didn't have a first and second. We went right to you. Is that your understanding as a board with regard to the agenda item?
For 10, I'm not sure about 11.
It looks like we're assuming that we're doing this. We're replacing Jennifer.
Kind of, but not necessarily. It means we're approving what work has to be done. We're approving what we're going to pay for it. But we haven't had the discussion about whether we're actually going to hire one person as a village employee to do this work.
I think that would be intense on the agenda so that we could get it posted as soon as possible.
Seems kind of implicit to me that if you're going to approve job description and salary range, that they're going to fill the position.
You could be filling it with a consultant, right? An agency can fill the position. You're just not filling it with a village employee.
For a payroll like this, I would think that would be awfully complicated to have someone else do it. Because there's so much internal knowledge you need in order to process it. Because it's broke, am I correct, Claire? It's broke down into a lot of different hunks and put in general ledger in different areas. And I mean, there's a lot to it. When I'm looking at this and I look at the budget, I get some grasp of what has to go in there, and it's big.
There's a lot of allocations on our payroll just because of the different groups. And the other thing was outsourcing and having someone else run it. Like I said, you'd still have to have someone in here doing the timesheets, approving them, entering them. You just send it to someone else to actually process it.
Yeah.
And then depending on their software and our software, would that be able to interface? That would be another thing we'd have to explore, I'm guessing, because our software's pretty old. I don't know if anyone else that has an interface with Fundware, if that would be possible. The one person I do know, if they had to do a journal entry then to bring it back into Fundware.
I've outsourced Miro before, too, and you have to have all the information. They don't understand what you want. They just process it and file your taxes. Well, that's pretty much the easy part, I would think, on a payroll like this.
I think it's implicit enough in 10-11 that I'll entertain a motion, but I want the person, if you feel that we want to replace this position with an actual village employee, I'd like that to be part of your motion and second, so that for the record we know exactly what the board voted on and what we didn't.
We do have a motion and a second for the description.
Okay, well, 10. We'll take it for number 11 then. That number 11, implicit number 11 would be that we are either replacing it with a village employee or not. Further discussion on the approval of the position description.
The question is, I just see that the backup to the water bookkeeper is completely removed from this position description, and evidently in the last one, was it removed because they weren't doing that anyway?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. There are other procedures in place.
Okay.
Nothing looked surprising to me here. Is there any area where you think? No.
What we did so that it would be easy is we took the last position description that was approved, and then anything that was changed, you can see crossed out or added in blue. And basically, it was just like you said, the water bookkeeper and billing taken out because of other procedures in place, and then taking out the collective bargaining items, which are no longer in place.
Right. Okay, you'd know better than I, but this is an opportunity if you want this person to do something more or less or different than the last person did. This is our opportunity to actually do that, so I just want to make sure that we're covering all of our bases. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 11. The approval of a wage for the payroll accountant's payable position. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Genridge?
Move to approve with the caveat that we are going to fill the position.
Okay, with the assumption that we fill the position. Okay. Trustee Zeller, did you?
I would second that motion that we approve a wage range, but that we designate the wage range as $19 to $20, as opposed to the range that's stated in the recommendation.
Okay.
But I agree that
we need to find a second for Dr. Gendry's motion. Is there a second for motion that we approve 19 to 22. Trustee Gass?
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion? And then I'll entertain your substitute motion, Trustee Taylor. You wanted to add something, Trustee Taylor?
I wanted to add that I support the additional motion that this person be hired, that it's implied that we are filling the position by this motion, that we're filling it, and I wanted to add that the finance director be involved in or direct the recruitment of that person in terms of interviewing and such. So, The direct report is to the finance director, if I saw that correctly. So I just think that...
we'll have to add some amendments to the motion, I think.
Yeah.
And you have enough there. And I want to make sure that I know what you understand by having her direct the search. I don't know. Just to make sure that we know exactly what we want her to do. And Trustee Gass.
No, I mean, I think the position's, critical enough to our organization that it should be filled. And I appreciate Clara's efforts in putting together the community-by-community comparison. And after reviewing that, that's why I'm in favor of the $19 to $22 range. It's definitely comparable, or on the low end of comparable, considering other municipalities. And it just gives us a little flexibility to hire the best person for the position. Of course, the understanding of the hiring process always is that you'll get the best person for the least amount of time. It gives us some flexibility, in terms of hiring a good qualified candidate. And I think based upon this community comparison, $22 as an upper end of the range isn't over the top by any stretch of the imagination. So that's why I'm in favor of the range.
Is this an hourly position? I mean, it is now, but does it have to be an hourly position in the way it's described? Do you know in other municipalities, is this an hourly position?
Based on the survey results, it looked like there was an hourly position in the majority of the communities. There was one that came back with a salary range.
Yeah, I see that in Middleton.
I think salary would probably be inappropriate for the position, because it's not
inappropriate
because it's not a supervisory position. You don't have to have considerable professional expertise. So I think this would not be an exempt position. If you look at all the factors that go into exempt versus not exempt, so I don't think it would be exempt. So hourly would be appropriate.
Okay. I want to commend you as well, Clara, for not only doing this research, but having explored the possibility of outsourcing. I appreciate that. I know it came up in some conversations before. So, I'll entertain any substitute or amendments to the initial. We have a motion on the floor to accept the salary range of $19 to $22.
I won't make any amendments.
No amendments?
No amendments.
Okay.
With the implied, we're filling the position. That was part
of it. It is implied in filling the position. You don't want to make an amendment with regard to Clara's involvement in the search, trustees?
I would just make a comment that the finance director be an integral part of the recruitment process and the recommendation to the village board.
Okay. Yeah, I would have hoped that would happen anyway. We'll make sure it tends to be the assumptions. Trustee Gass, do you have something? Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
One abstention. Motion carries. Item 12, action regarding the Public Works Committee from September 12th, approval of the revised contract with Brown County for Webster Avenue Bridge Replacement Project. Let's see how much these things cost. I just Trustee Zeller.
Trustee Gass and I were the Public Works Committee that day. What's the name?
Well, was it?
Lynn was there. That's
right.
So we had all the background information provided to us with some explanations from Craig. So, I mean, we could just go through and make motions here unless you want to get a little background before we make the motions.
I always like it if we have a motion, let's take it. Trustee Zeller, does it make sense to go through items A through D one at a time? We can have the motion in the second, and then you can fill us in as to
I think it would with maybe more discussion on D coming up. So if we could handle them in order, I think is appropriate, with A being the Webster Avenue Bridge project. And at our meeting, we made a recommendation to the board that we approve the revised municipal agreement for the Webster Avenue Bridge construction project and sign it and return it to the Brown County Highway Department. And so
are you making that
motion again, with the comment that it's things have become more beneficial for the village with this agreement.
Is there a second? Trustee Gans, do you want a second?
I'll second.
Discussion? Mm-hmm. Trustee Zeller, do you want to, or do you want to leave it up to Mr.
Burke? Just to do a little wrap up.
All right.
What happened is, I think I've mentioned this in at least the Public Works a couple times and maybe at a board meeting, with the new staff at Brown County Highway Department, they have relooked at all of the projects, the next 5 to 10 years, scheduled projects, the municipal agreements, a whole variety of things. And they've done a number of things, and I think a couple of these things will come up a little bit later as well. They've done made a number of changes. One of the things that they found was that their municipal agreements with the villages and the cities had a cost share for bridges, which was not correct, according to the Brown County staff. There should not have been a cost share with a municipality when it's a county bridge. The agreement that we had signed last year had a cost share. So Brown County Highway Department and Brown County have come back to us and said, we're going to remove the local cost share that was allocated to Alloway, and they will take care of, along with the state, the entire cost of the project. So that's a good deal.
So they caught this mistake and came to us and said,
we want to correct it. And they deleted the $280,000 of potential local cost share. So I think we should sign the agreement real fast.
That one's kind of easy.
Blow on the ink so it dries, too. Any further discussion? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 12B, action regarding the approval of a contract with Brown County for Hoffman Road Reconstruction Project. Trustee Zeller, I will defer to you. Do you or Trustee Gass have a motion with regard to this item?
I'll move to approve the Public Works Committee recommendation.
I'll second.
Second, Trustee Zeller. Discussion?
This is the agreement for the Hoffman Road project. It is the standard municipal agreement between Brown County and the municipality. The table on page 2 shows the cost allocations and how they will be handled between the two parties. It doesn't give you the bottom line cost. It shows the cost allocations. On the street, including the curb and gutter, the sub base, and the storm sewer system, is a 50-50 cost share between Alloway and Brown County. The utilities that we will replace, which would be the sanitary sewer for the entire length of Hoffman Road because it's in very poor condition, and then the water main on the west end of Hoffman Road will be our cost. The other feature that's in here, and it's toward the bottom, it's XX14, stormwater management. That $25,000 county and $25,000 village share, basically there's $50,000 in the cost of our Hoffman Road pond construction that is going to be charged back to this project. And it means that we will pay $25,000 less toward the project, and Brown County is going to pay $25,000 more. And that difference is, we say $50,000, because we already spent it on the Hoffman Road project. And so this is the cost allocation for the project. We have gone out for proposals to 5 engineering firms. We selected an engineering firm last Friday, and the contracts are being developed right now. We went to Patrick Engineering, McMahon, Robert E. Lee, Omni, and
forgot one other one. Anyway, Paul Fontecchio at Brown County and myself reviewed the proposals, and we arrived at Omni for the project through our rating criteria and including cost. And so the project will start as soon as this agreement is signed. We'll sign contracts for the engineering work, and the project will get started. And it will be a project that will proceed next February to bid and construction.
And this goes from Libel to East River, is that right?
It's from Webster to East River. It's the entire length.
Okay, but not east of the East River Drive.
No, not east of East River, because
so that
that part is being deferred because Bellevue has the two other main east-west roads under construction next year, so this road's going to be left until the other two are done, and then they're going to come back and reconstruct that portion.
But it'll go to the bridge.
We'll go to the bridge.
I think you said East River Drive.
Still going to be screwed up.
It'll go all the way to the bridge, right?
From Webster all the way to the East River Bridge.
Oh, okay, that's what I was asking.
Okay, yeah, but not beyond the
bridge. Oh, I missed the word bridge at the end. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason that we have the west portion,
one block
the reason we have the west portion is because Brown County really wants to get that whole section of road done, because the west section is in almost as poor condition as the east section. They don't want to come back and do it at a separate date, because it'll be 5 or 6 years before they can get back. We have bad water main and sanitary sewer. We found when we did Bitters Court, when we tied into that sanitary sewer collapsed on us on Huffman. So that raised the priority for doing that, and as long as it fits into this project and it's a cost share, this is the most economical way to do it.
Zeller, how do the residents on Bitters Court feel about their side yards being constructed after their front yards were people on the corner of Bitters and Huffman?
On both approaches to Bitters Court, the sanitary sewer had to be excavated into Huffman Road.
Yeah.
The work that was done within Huffman Road was done very quickly. I would say within 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours.
Wow.
They tried their best, but then they left the excavation open gravel for, a week, maybe 10 days. I talked with several of the neighbors here as we approached the completion of Bitters Court to ask them if they think they could handle another reconstruction project, that portion from Webster to Libel, and I resoundingly heard yes, even from the elderly that need to get in and out.
And the folks on the corner?
The biggest problem we have right now is that the group home that's on the corner of Huffman Road and Bitters Court on the west axis to Bitters Court, have the residents get out for walks with the attendants. And the attendants are having a very, very difficult time getting, as they come down the driveway, they have to drop off of the poured concrete gutter apron down to the first base mat of the blacktop, and then they have to actually go back up and climb up. And the wheelchairs that are motorized and the conventional wheelchairs, they're really having a hard time. So I talked with Craig about could we pour a small portion to get them up their driveway, because they don't take the residents down the driveway to the Huffman Road. See, they have two driveways there. They don't take them to Huffman Road. The residents want to stay on Bitters Court, and they travel around the court. Okay. So we need to get that second mat down on Bitters Court, like in 2013 for sure. Ravine Way, which we did last year, got their second coat, their second mat last week or 2 weeks ago. They waited a long, long time. But
is there there's a reason for that, though? Don't we need it to settle?
Yeah, we needed to wait till fall.
Yeah.
But the paving is going on.
Craig assured me that the payment will be done on these three projects, St. Matthew's Mission, East Mission, and am I right on that? East Mission and Bidders, to close out the contract within 2013.
Yep.
But they've got temperature considerations to lay the blacktop, so they've got to get that done before too long here.
So, Craig, we usually let it for a year, go through a winter, and then come back, but in this case we're not?
Many times we do, but these roads were worked on last fall and this spring, and with the compaction testing that was done, the compaction was done, and the compaction testing that we do is the quality control. We feel we're okay to go ahead and do that, and that's why we left them until mid-September, early October to pave, because that still gave us 3 months for most of the streets to sit. But we need to close out the bond.
Okay.
So we're between a rock and a hard place. We need to have all our projects done before too long.
So then getting
36 months on the bond.
Why did this, I mean, so this would have happened even if we didn't have this need for these folks to have that second, it would have happened anyway.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we knew this a long time ago, that we weren't going to have a full year to allow it to settle.
Right. It was our plan. It was our plan.
In some, if for some circumstances, we cannot get that second layer down, we need to make some accommodation for the group home so that they can get down to the street level,
yeah,
the blacktop level. But then bringing this project back to your question, Steve, on Hoffman Road, the understanding is that the portion from Webster to Libel, that the curb and gutter and the sidewalk are not altered in any way, that curb and gutter and sidewalk is maintained except for any portions that are compromised.
We're going to have some spot replacements.
Yeah, that the...
And that goes pretty quick.
The footprint, the intrusion into the setback, into the right-of-way is very limited when you don't replace the sidewalk and the curb and gutter.
Right.
So that's kind of where... And we've got to provide some egress and ingress to the courts.
Sure.
In that area.
Even aside from the inconvenience, there are people who, you know, there's a lot of noise and the ground is shaking,
yeah,
and there's
yeah.
a lot of disruption. And mm-hmm. to have it be done basically
2 years.
3 years in a row.
3 years, yeah. 3 years in a row. Actually.
And we need to maintain the road open for traffic.
Right.
We will be doing
Craig,
that.
This next, what's the plan then for this other section in terms of when it will all have to be closed? And will we be doing the same thing of not letting it settle for a full year and have we sort of accelerated the entire process? Given that if the tests come back favorable with regard to compacting?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I can't give you a cast in stone answer. I believe that the county will want to do the complete paving job by late fall. But that is a good question. I don't know for sure on that. That I'm not sure of.
Can you
have to check
at our next meeting? Can you just give us an update as to what the answer is to that?
So, if I could just comment on that policy of leaving the second MAC goal to the next year. That next year, that paving project would go to May, June at the soonest, because the road has to be a correct temperature to accept that second MAC. And the problem that we have is that the whole winter season, the snowplows are repeatedly hitting the concrete edge, and if you look at Ravine, there's chunk after chunk after chunk out of our brand new concrete gutter aprons. So I guess my feeling is we just, as a policy, you know, change that and try to do the job in one season.
Have the construction methods changed in that we no longer see a need to do that, or is it just sort of you have to let Mother Nature do its thing? And I understand your point, Trustee Zeller, but if the whole road's going to be compromised because we haven't waited the amount of time that we were supposed to wait, and we have to put a third or do some sort of milling and paving, then it's even worse.
It is something that we look at on every street that we do, and we evaluate the construction that took place and the compaction, And there's a factor that comes into play. Sometimes we run into settling problems, and when we run into settling problems, and we can't pave it that same year. We simply cannot.
Yeah, so you have to play by ear.
We had that on a couple of streets recently. But the construction techniques are slightly different. One thing is we use what's called crusher dust as our final sub-base before we put the actual gravel base underneath the asphalt. That, in other words, when we replace pipe, we bed it in large stone. But once it's bedded in large stone, then we use this crusher dust, which is basically 3/8-inch fines. It behaves like concrete. It really sets up well. Yes, we use it for all of our water main repairs. When we have a leak, that's crusher dust that we're using to fill that back in. Really compacts well. That's part of what, and then we do more extensive on these, because we have so many projects. We have a soils testing firm that routinely is checking every 50 feet, 100 feet, 200, depending on the street, checking the compaction while the contractor is doing his work to make sure that we have proper compaction. We've had to have contractors re-excavate, replace, and recompact. So those are the two things that we're doing that give us more flexibility for paving the same year.
Trustee Zeller?
So one further comment on that. For these streets that are north-south streets that are not headed east and west,
yeah,
to their proper drains, their proper storm drains. So what happens with the first base course goes down, and then there's a considerable lift to the concrete, and that holds the water in the street. So if you have a significant rainfall, and then you go and you look at it, the water, it can't get to the storm sewer inlets. So it's sitting in the street, and it's sitting on the low side of any whatever north-south running street it is. So I've got, on my court, I've got 7 homes with standing water in the street after the rain, and then all the debris and such sits in the road that's brought down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another downside to it. If we can give it 2-3 months in between, you know, that's a livable situation. But with going a year in between, I don't think it's practical.
That sounds like it's less frequent if we have better construction methods, and we're testing. And if it's not stable, it doesn't make any sense to put more pavement on.
And we do have that happen from time to time. It does happen.
A bit of an aside, just really quickly, is Alloway a better place in terms of settling than you might see where a lot of the soil is sandy or
we have
a lot of clay, and that doesn't move dirt?
The fact that we have a lot of clay is actually good for road construction.
Yeah, so. Okay, good enough. It's hard when you're putting a porch in here.
Yes.
Digging that stuff up.
Just one comment.
We have a motion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Trustee Gaines.
It probably pertains more to the last one, you know, where Brown County came to us and said, whoops, we didn't follow our procedure. Do we have the procedure books?
Procedure book for?
Well, because it really pertains to the last one, the thought just occurred to me, because I'm always late with my thoughts. Which is, the county came to us after the new people came in. They said, whoops, per our policies, we're not supposed to make this a cost share on a county bridge.
Yeah.
And so my question is, do we have their policy books so we can make sure that they're following their policies?
We don't have their policy book, no. We don't. Ours, of course, is in our ordinances, but we don't have theirs. And they're rewriting it right now. The design standards and the policies, they're rewriting.
Are they going to write in a cost share to the municipality?
That's why you're hearing several communities say, wait a minute, this is a change, and why are you doing that? It's because there's many changes going on.
Well, I mean, my point is at some point when they finalize it, we should get a copy of their book
so
we can make sure that they're following their procedure.
We've cordially...
Unless it's in our favor, then we'll be blissfully ignorant.
We've invited the Brown County Public Works staff to our Green Bay Public Works Association specifically to talk about that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see the design standards. Let's make sure we all understand what we are. what we have to follow, what they are, and there's things that, that some of the folks disagree with, so they're under deliberation. Okay. Yeah, it's a quite a process. But it's good. It's good for everybody. There's a lot of improvement there.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 12C, approval of a draft letter to the Metropolitan Sewage District regarding 2014 annual budget. Is there a motion with regard to this item? I'll make a motion to approve the draft letter. Is there a second? Trustee Zeller?
I'll second the draft letter.
Discussion? I can't emphasize enough how great Craig has been in dealing with the Met. We would be, and other municipalities are benefiting from how diligent he's been with them. And we've talked about this before. This is a huge issue for our residents, and they could see some real skyrocketing costs if Craig hadn't done what he's done to make sure that everything is lined up.
So at the Public Works meeting, we just had the draft that Craig intended to modify. So now I think we have the modified document. So maybe we would move to approve the actual document.
Final document, okay.
What happened is we had a budget meeting Friday morning, the Public Works directors and the industries with Green Midmet to go over. They gave their budget presentation. These are, in essence, the questions that we posed to them that we felt needed to be addressed to further clarify how they're spending their money. That's what this is. The reason for moving this so quickly is that their next commission meeting on the budget for a workshop is October 10th. And we made a decision of trying to get this in quicker rather than later so they have more time to deliver it. And that's why we moved this as quickly as we did.
Do you know what time that meeting is?
It'll be in the morning, probably 8:30.
I know it's difficult for a lot of us to make it, but the more meetings of the Met that we can attend, the better. Craig is always there. I've been there a few times, but my experience has been the municipal representation has been abysmal. Not only is Craig there all the time, but there are few other public works directors or representatives from municipalities. And Green Bay sends someone pretty frequently, and De Pere once in a while. But other than that, there are the three of them and very few supervisors or aldermen or trustees. So I think they start to react a little bit differently once they hear from someone new, even if we do work for a municipality. Craig, can you remind us really quickly about the format of their agenda? They don't have public appearances right away, if I remember. We had to wait a while for them to... Have they changed that? So if it starts at 8:30, when would be a good time for people to break away from work if they can and come and attend that meeting?
I don't think they actually have an agenda item for public appearances, unless it's requested. I think the October 10th meeting is going to be just on the budget.
Okay.
That would be a good meeting to attend.
But in terms of any time during that meeting?
Usually it's 8:30 and when they start.
And I remember waiting a long time before they even entertained input from...
Yeah.
So they tend to do it at the end rather than the beginning.
We can request to speak initially or speak at a certain time. We can do that and they'll work with us on that.
Okay. Just off the top of your heads, if you were be able to come, can I assume that earlier would be better, closer to the beginning of the meeting? So
okay.
Craig, could you request that? And then I'm not asking you to commit to being there, but if you can, try to make it as close to 8:30 as you can. And that's at the Met, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second. It's no longer a draft meeting. It's draft letter. It's the final letter. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 12D, the approval of the revised Green Avenue reconstruction project schedule. Trustee Gass?
I'll move to postpone until the 2nd October meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Copin? Discussion? Trustee Gass?
Craig sent a memo. I mean, it has to do with financing and what might be available or not. And Public Works considered it. We understood one state of affairs, but Craig went to a recent meeting and there may indeed be some money so it could remain on track, not have to be deferred in terms of construction. But Craig needs a little bit more time to get some final figures and final consensus on what might or might not be available in terms of funding.
What happened is we had a meeting with the DOT. They came in and met with the communities on each project. That was about 10 days ago when they met with us. The representative from the DOT said, your project cost is far greater than what you estimated, based on how we cost estimate. You need to decide if you're going to spend the additional money yourself or go back to the MPO and request the project be delayed till the next funding cycle. We were prepared, discussed it at Public Works, because I wanted everyone to be knowledgeable that there might be a change before we actually started to discuss it with the MPO. When I got to the meeting, it turns out DePere, Green Bay, and Alloy each had a project where the DOT said, your cost is far greater, you're probably going to have to move it back in schedule. The planning people at the MPO, Brown County Transportation Subcommittee, it's a municipal planning organization, Brown County Transportation Subcommittee, were aware of this and basically said with the changes in the MPO to a new category, which is a larger MPO than the smaller one they were before, they moved up over 200,000 people, about $15 million additional funding became available to the MPO. They basically said, we will have the money to fund all of these projects, so don't change your schedule, we'll have the money. We're going to have a meeting early in October with the representative from the state that handles the funding, arranged by Brown County Transportation Subcommittee, so we can get the details and make sure that we're all on the same page and that we're assured that this is a goal.
Okay.
And so that's why we'll wait till later in October before we really act on anything, because they're saying that they've got the funding, they've got the notice that they've got the funding, but let's make sure that it's, everybody agreed, let's make sure that we're all on the same page and we know what we've got for funding. Now, in the interim, what I did, because we needed to know, and Transportation 75, Complete Streets comes into play and some other things. So I went back to the consultant we used initially on Green Avenue, and I retained Grafe to do a few thousand dollars worth of work for us to cost estimate this project and to give us the conceptual design to meet Complete Streets, because we didn't have to do that before. Now we do with the change in regulations. So we need to nail down what this project really is and really know what it's going to cost. So I'll have that in a couple of weeks. So we'll know the cost, we'll know what the scope is, and we'll know about the funding. So hopefully we have a rather major issue resolved.
The reason I'm confused is I'm on the Brown County Planning Commission taking ex-trustee Swatlowski's spot on it, and we met a couple of weeks ago, and they voted on the plan, and there were, I looked through it, but I didn't have the raw numbers from the original cost of the project. I wasn't aware that anything had changed at all. That there was a.
I think it's that recent.
Oh, it's even between then and now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's that recent.
Okay.
So I felt we were going to have a problem, and we had to move the project schedule back because there's no way we could afford the cost of this
right.
project.
Right.
And it turns out that we may have gotten very lucky here, and this works out quite well.
Good. Any further discussion? Trustee Durham?
Just one thing, Craig. Is it kind of fun to stand up there and tell us something good instead of something that's going to cost us money?
There's a couple of good.
Yeah,
it's
nice.
Yeah,
well,
a couple of. Oh,
yeah. It is. Yeah. Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, a report on the process for lateral replacement. I don't know about any of you. I've gotten a few calls from people. I think we have a great program with, you know, in essence, this loan program that will help residents to replace their sections of the laterals if they're to fail during the process of replacing them, or even if they haven't failed, but we've discovered that they're about to, that they have the option of having a source of funds to take care of it. And that the work is done cheaper because we're out there anyway, and they don't have to, you know, basically dig up their yard again if they decide to do it a year later. So I think it's a great program. But we've still had, you know, I've had a number of calls about not understanding who covers what in terms of the right-of-way or whether it's on our property. And then even if it is the resident's responsibility to take care of it, what our involvement in that process is. And we have instructions and guidelines that we give to the resident as to how they should work with the contractor, where they should dig, so on and so forth. And I wanted Craig to sort of walk us through that process so that if any of you get calls like I did, you sort of know what Craig is telling them from the village end. And because oftentimes there's a misunderstanding or a misreporting of that interaction between the resident and the village. So, again, I think it just behooves us to have at least a general understanding of a lot of the processes that take place so we can speak intelligently to residents, because oftentimes if they don't get the answer they want from the village staff, they call us. And if we're just sort of shaking our heads saying, I have no idea, call the village staff, well, they've already done that. So.
I think what I thought we were going to talk about here was when you locate laterals and services and a couple of the problems that we've had with being in the wrong location and how that the one. So that's what I thought we were talking about. So that I'll have to go back.
Okay.
And it's something I need to do anyway, a definitive program document, because in the policy manual, we're looking at making some changes and taking some things out of the policy manual. One is sewer backups, and one is lateral replacement. And putting it into the ordinance so it's better defined and people can read it. And
right.
That's... So
you know what, that's fine.
That separate.
Sure, okay, yeah.
But basically, for a lateral on our projects, we replace everything that's in the right-of-way. Unless it's already been replaced in reconstruction. Like on Huffman Road, there'll be about 12 sanitary laterals that will be replaced. And if they're old laterals, we replace them with a new lateral to the property line, to the right way of the street. Then we encourage the resident to replace them on the private side. We're getting 70% of the residents replacing them on all of our projects, around 70%, which is great. And we line up the contractor. We did it as part of our project. We line up the contractor. There's two methods of construction. Open cut, in some cases, has to be done. Most of them, though, we bore it in so we don't disturb their lawn. And we bore it from out in the street, straight up the pipe that's there, and then up into the floor, into the basement, make the connections, concrete the floor back to complete it, and it's done. It runs about $50 a foot is normally what we get for a bid price. So a typical lateral in most of our homes, you know, the sizing is maybe $750 on the low end. It might be $1,200, $1,300 on the high end, depending on how long it is. And then if there's a backflow preventer that's needed, that can be added to it. That's usually a couple hundred dollars. But that's kind of the program. But what I need to do is kind of summarize that so that a resident can read it and understand what we do.
Right.
So I'll bring that back along with our sewer backup policy, because both of those need to be a little optimization and get into the ordinance. I thought that the critical issue here was when you apply for a permit, what happens, and then why did we have the one or two cases where we had problems? And I think that's useful for you to understand, so you know what we do when we issue a permit. And it'll kind of explain what happened on the property in Parkfront Way. So as long as I have that, I'll cover that.
Okay.
And I thought it would be good just to show you the documents rather than talk about them, because I think this is the permit application. This happens to be the one in Parkfront Way. And when we get this, the permit application, well, then
what happened?
I'll show you. It was difficulty in locating the lateral. This this is used for sanitary sewer, water main, or storm sewer. In this case, it's a storm sewer. What happened here is the property owner hired a landscape firm to put a drain tile in his backyard. So no permit was required from Public Works. They put the drain tile in the backyard, brought the drain tile around to the sump pump on the side of the house, which would have been on the south side, to hook it into the sump pump and sump pump pit. They hooked it in there, but there was no drainage out of the sump pit into the lateral. And what it was, is this was back around 1971, 72, when the utilities were put in that street. And the storm lateral was a one of these black plastic 4-inch pipes, corrugated pipe like you buy at Fleet Farm. That's what the lateral was. It had collapsed. So their lateral did not function. So then they came to us to get a permit to put the lateral in. And that's the permit application. What happens when we get a permit application is we go back into the files. And this is a drawing of this is the lot right here. And this is the design drawing. We don't know if it's a record drawing or not, because back at this time, we're not sure if field information actually made it to all of the drawings, and drawings were revised so that we would have everything on here. But you can see there's no dimensions on here as to where this lateral is. It doesn't tell you how far it is from the manhole. It tells you how long the storm lateral is right here, and it tells you how long this sanitary sewer is, and here's the water service right here, and the water main is right here behind the curb. But it doesn't tell you where it is on the route. What the fellows do when they get this request is they look at the drawings, they go back to the records. Sometimes there's field notes from the construction that gives you dimensions. Sometimes there's pictures. It depends on what was done and when it was done and so forth. But it's as you go back in time, the records become less definitive. Now, Andy would normally be the one that would do this. He was on vacation this week, and that factors into this. The locates were done by one of the other fellows. Normally what they would do is either go off of the existing information, or they look where this water lateral is, because you can find the curb box. And the sanitary is usually right next to it, so they know where that is. But when it comes to the storm lateral, sometimes we don't know where it is, and sometimes it was put in later. Not necessarily put in when these utilities were put in. And you can see in this case, it shows the lateral over here. This is on the north side of the water service and the sanitary service. It shows it on the north side, and that's an important point because it didn't end up being there. Mm-hmm. When Andy does a locate, and when our fellows meet with a contractor, basically what they tell the contractor, they normally don't mark where the storm lateral is. They tell the contractor, here's your water service, here's your sanitary. Excavate here. It'll be close to this, but you need to excavate to the left and you need to excavate to the right. He typically tells them, if you go more than 5 feet this way or more than 5 feet that way, stop, give us a call, we'll come out and help you locate it. That's normally what happens. This lateral was marked on the road, which Andy wouldn't normally do, but whoever did the locate marked it off of the records. And which is fine, but if you look here, to the north would have been over here somewhere in their driveway. Would have been over here somewhere.
No, I'm sorry, Craig. They usually don't mark the road. Why? Why don't we usually mark the road?
We mark it for the water and the sewer, sanitary sewer, but usually we don't mark it for the storm sewer because the storm sewer has more variability. We don't necessarily
know. So how does the resident find out where did they?
Well, because what they were instructed to do here, here's where it was marked for the water service, okay? And what the contractor was told to do is dig next to it here and dig next to it here up to 5 feet in either direction, and if you don't find it, then give us a call. Now, they could only go about 3.5-4 feet this way, and they went about 3.5-4 feet this way. There's where it actually is. It's about, you know, 3 feet over from the where the trench was. They only went a couple feet this way. They didn't go far enough to catch the lateral.
No, yeah, I guess I maybe I asked the wrong question. So that mark there is where the water line comes in, right?
Yeah.
Right, so did we just tell people dig within 5 feet of the water line if you're looking for the storm sewer line?
In this case, because we didn't have an exact location of the storm lateral. Some cases we do. It's all dimensioned out. We can mark it right out. Right. But in this case...
But we just say, all right, go start digging where we know the water line is, and yeah, dig 5 feet to the left and right,
right,
and you should find...
You should be able to find it.
Okay.
And what happened?
Because in essence, we don't know where the storm sewer line is, right? We don't know what to tell them.
Well, in the previous drawing, it was shown being over here. See, and here's the driveway. So we were hoping that it was not under the driveway.
Right. We don't know though. We have these records, and some records we don't know where it is. So we tell them to start where the water line comes in if you're looking for the storm sewer line.
Well, we
and just start.
There's usually some information. I mean, in this case, there's a drawing that shows that it's north of the water service and the sanitary sewer.
Right.
That's where it shows it. We felt that might not be right.
Okay.
Because the driveway was there. And we were hoping it wasn't right because the driveway was right there. This is one of them where it's not very clear. Whereas a lot of times we have very good information, but here we don't have as good information because it's back in the 70s. Some of these go back to the 30s and 40s. You know, the guys locate the stuff through experience and figuring it out sometimes when they're that old because there might not be any records. Mm-hmm. But what happened here is when the contractor started digging, he didn't go far enough down here. Didn't follow the directions. And you see this mark over here and this mark here? Well, that's where the water main is, going this way. And what happened is he dug here and then decided, well, it's not there. So he went down and dug over there where the other mark is.
The water?
He went
water
down
line?
Here and he dug a hole water down here.
Oh.
And we didn't know that because there was no dialogue on this. When Andy went here, they called and said, we can't find it. Andy went there and there was no contractor. Andy came back that afternoon and the hole was over here. They dug a hole back over here. Now, here's the thing. I didn't mention this before, but that's an existing lateral. So when you have an existing lateral and you're at the house, you should follow the pipe out to the road. This was a landscaping contractor, so he used a, he didn't use a backhoe. He used
trencher?
A trencher. He used a trencher. Well, if you're trying to follow a plastic pipe with a trencher, came around the corner, came this way a little ways, turned and went to the road, missed the pipe. That was an existing lateral. If you're digging with a backhoe, you follow it right down to the road. So you had a combination of things that happened here. Didn't follow Andy's directions here. Didn't follow the pipe out to the road. Went and dug some holes in other places, which is why the property owner was so upset, because they went and dug here, and then they went and dug there, and then they went and dug over there, and pretty soon this whole lawn was dug up. Combination of things.
Now, is there a point when we advise the resident or we ourselves will put a camera in from
sure
the house and
sure
sort of let them know where it goes?
If this contractor had called us and was there on the site, when he said he couldn't find it here, what happened is he called in and said, I can't find it, and then left the job. But Andy went there, and there was nobody there.
Right.
So then he went back a couple more times, but when he caught him later in the day, they had already dug another hole in another spot. They just didn't understand how to do this. They don't do this kind of work. This contractor doesn't do this kind of work. So it was hit or miss on this part. Most of the contractors we work with, and here's, I'll give you another case, because we've only had two of these since I've been here that have happened like this. And they've all been in the last 6 weeks.
They all called me.
This is one on Delaware. This is Champion Dredging. They do this kind of work. And they know our process and they know how to do it. And what happened here is, now this shows a sump pump at this house up here, but it's not there. It's actually over here in the house, on that, this way. I don't know why it shows it there, but this is the plans from when Della Hut was done. The plans show that the lateral is right here. This is the information we gave the contractor. He brought the service around the house over here, got to the right of way, and there's no lateral. And what happened was, when that happened, as soon as he got there, he called us and said, I can't find it. He talked to Jeff. Jeff said, okay, you cap your lateral. We'll find it. We'll call you back when we know what advice to give you. And what we found was, what Jeff found is, he went back to the original notes from construction. This was a 2004 project. Everything on the street was drawn correctly in the as-built drawing except for one. The lateral is actually here. This is where it was shown in the design drawing, but in the field construction, we moved it over here because their sump was over there. So it was moved to here. That's where the property owner wanted it, but it didn't get to the record drawing.
So when someone buys a house and the building inspector comes out to verify that you're hooked up to all the correct places, how is that building inspector verifying that you're hooked up to?
He would be. He might do a dye test. He might do a flow test. He may already know it's hooked up because we may have records that showed it was hooked up at a certain time. Yeah. This was the second case.
It was verified that you're hooked up, but
yeah.
It was just never changed to the drawings as to where the hookup actually is.
Well, what happened here is the construction drawings, the actual field construction. When we construct in the field, we have a man on site all the time. And he's locating all of this information. So we know exactly where that manhole is. It's tied into landmarks. We know where that service is, what station it is from the manhole, how many feet over it is. All that information we have. What happened in this case is a CAD person that was creating the final drawing and putting all the data in just happened to miss that one was actually over here.
Okay.
And it was the only one that was wrong in that whole set of plans. It was an error. So what we did, when that contractor called us and said, okay, I'm over here, Jeff, and I don't know, I can't find it. Jeff said, okay, stop right there and cap it. Leave it open and protect it. Let us check. We went out and televised it, found it was here, went back and looked at the records, and sure enough, that's where it's supposed to be. So in this case, what we're doing is we're going to make this hook up to here because he ran it to here, the information we gave him. So we're going to do this hookup. That's all we can do. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it doesn't happen very often. I asked the guys, in the 7 years I've been here, have you guys had this stuff happen? And they said, no, this is the first two times where we've had a major one like this. The one in Park Friendly, and then this one in Bella.
So our records are sometimes not right, but it's pretty infrequent, is what you're saying.
It's pretty infrequent.
And usually if we can give them an area to dig within 10 feet, five each direction, and
usually know pretty much exactly where it is, plus or minus a foot or two. What we did on this one, with the new camera that we have, which is not absolutely ideal for this kind of work, because in a storm sewer, it's hard to get it into the storm sewer, because it's not a motorized vehicle that crawls down the pipe. We manually slide it down the pipe and pull it back. So we have to be a little careful that we get the right location, because it might be, the line might not be tight. But we were able to locate that it was right here wherever it was. It was 9 feet over from the water service. We were able to locate it and verified it from two ways. And we had the contractor go there and dig, and we were within a foot of it. We don't do that on every one because it takes quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
So only do it when we have to.
So our process is that, one comment by a person I talked to was, so your records are bad, and we're digging up our yards in order and we have to dig up our yards to a certain extent until you'll come out and televise it and then tell us exactly where it is. But the two responses to that are, well, our records aren't all that bad in that we don't have this come up very often. We have a policy where we tell you where to dig and then you dig 5 feet to the right and 5 feet to the left. If you can't, we'll come out and find it for you. Right?
In this case, the contractor went and did things that just shouldn't have done.
And the reason we don't televise from the beginning is we'd spend hundreds of hours going out to people's houses and televising this stuff.
Yeah, and now that we have that tool, we'll use it more, but this is really the first two or three laterals we've televised.
And then I would assume we then update our records so that we know exactly where...
We're sure exactly where it is, yeah. But in this case, had the contractor just said, wait a minute, I can't find it, come on over and help me, we would have had it done. Because what would have happened is he would have dug over here another 2 or 3 feet. If we didn't hit it, we would have brought the televising camera out and we'd have found it that way. And that would have all happened in the course of the morning. But
do we have a sheet that we give to contractors and to residents? That, I mean, it's not a complicated process. Your steps 1, 2, and 3, you know, dig here, go 5 feet right, go 5 feet left. If you still haven't found it, call us.
That was discussed with those folks, yeah, right there on site. Yeah.
Do we have something written down we can give them?
Well, that's the...
When you talk
about the procedure, that's what we're going to have to do is get that updated. We got to do that.
Well, could we... Should that present itself again when somebody goes out to meet the contractor and he's not there, can you flag it and say, no digging till we do get back together? And so they're not digging up the whole yard?
Well,
I guess you wouldn't really expect that someone would be digging up the whole yard, would you?
Right. But
we've not had anybody do this. With all the contractors that come in, we've not had anybody do this. Nobody else has done the other project where you had a more experienced contractor. When they got to where you said they should be and it wasn't there, they called you up.
Yeah, they called us up and they said, what do we do? And Jeff said, cap it. We'll have to go find it.
Yeah.
And we'll call you back and let you know what we find and we'll go from there.
It sounds like a fine policy and a fine procedure, and I think the board just needs to know it, and I think we need to give something to the contractor and the resident, maybe as part of the permitting process, that here's what you should do.
Well, the other thing, too, is when you're looking back on these files, I mean, you can go back to the 40s or the 70s, and stuff wasn't GPS monitored back then, and they may not be where they say they were.
Right.
And Pete... came to Alloway and was the engineering technician. Pete was the one that started accumulating these records the correct way. But you got stuff that goes back well before Pete. Pete was meticulous about getting those details and making sure that there was a record of everything. He was very good at that. And Jeff does the same thing, and so do the water guys. Everything we do in the field now has a drawing, not only the engineering plans. And the engineering plans are all created as a record drawing, so we have that. But there's a note for every installation that they can call up and look at the actual layout and all the dimensions of where it was. And usually there's photos of it as it was buried in the ground, so you know what it looks like. And that's standard procedure. That's been the last 10 years.
Right. It's going to take a while to get done.
Yeah. But that's what happens with some of these older streets and so forth. So, but that is the situation that we ran into, and that's the two, or the one where you got phone calls, and there might have been another one a little different, but that's the one with the phone calls, and that's what happened there.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. Any questions? Motion to adjourn. Trustee Gendron, second. Trustee Gast, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thanks.